Ludmila, thank you so much for being here. Ludmila Preslova uses her extensive experience with global and cultural inclusion to help create talent-rich workplaces. She is the author of The Canary Code, A Guide to Neurodiversity, Dignity, and Intersectional Belonging at Work. We're going to learn more about that. The book is listed among the top 10 management books of 2024. She is also a professor of industrial psychology. Ludmila's research focuses on addressing workplace aggression, discrimination, and incivility. She's a contributing writer to the Harvard Business Review, and her pieces, as I have found, are insightful and important. Ludmila, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis. All right, Ludmila, hello. How are you?
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you, Andrew. And definitely such an important topic. I look forward to our conversation.
Great, as do I. So let me start first, and we've had a chance to just talk briefly. And I did ask you this question earlier, and I'm going to ask it again. It seems like so many of the experts that I'm talking to as part of this summit who've devoted their lives to this issue of workplace aggression and incivility, and you have a specialty which we're going to talk about, but are bully targets, bully victims themselves. And I find out that you too have been a bully victim. Can you share your experience with us?
Absolutely. Well, not counting the childhood, which was pretty bad.
Okay.
In the workplace, I've had some situations that had been pretty challenging, and especially one of my academic positions kind of early on in my career had very interesting both peer-to-peer and bosses, so top-down bullying. And that was kind of the first time, the first cycle of my interest in bullying when I did several papers. And then later on, I had a situation that, again, they're kind of the toxic waves in organizations sometimes come and go. When culture starts getting problematic, bullying is right there. So again, there was a period of time in organizational life when there were all kinds of bullying. And in that particular situation, there was also quite a bit of outward bullying. So towards people who are technically higher position on the organizational ladder. So that prompted the work on upward bullying. But I definitely had experienced quite a bit of it. And I think many of us tend to intellectualize sometimes. I probably do it more than others, but there is definitely a factor of intellectualizing and just trying to understand more what is going on and is it my fault or other more systemic issues.
And boy, in my career in television production in New York, did I ever think about what am I doing wrong? Why am I bringing about this behavior? And most importantly, what can I do to change it? Let me just ask a quick question. Was it, in terms of the bullying you experienced, was it harsh talking? Was that the kind and belligerence? How did it manifest itself?
Well, I think mostly what I observed was the quiet backstabby type.
Okay.
When people just go and do various machinations behind your back, but also definitely the yelling and in your face incivility as well. But I think the kind of jobs I had were mostly the white collar bullying, the backstabby type.
Yeah. And you were in academia while this was happening and nonprofit? Is that my understanding?
Nonprofits and academia, yes. So those were the environments. I worked at a factory when I was a teenager, actually. But I'm sure there were things happening, but I did not see too much of the bullying. Occasionally, people would yell at each other, but I don't think it was anything that was quite as political. But I was 14, so I don't entirely know what else was going on.
Yeah, and I'm sure being an immigrant and having an accent, so to speak, might have also been a cause of some of the younger bullying that you experienced?
Oh, absolutely. People, there was one case, one individual that was the issue. The person did not like immigrants. So that was one of the episodes. But there were all kinds of other things. And sometimes people just don't know. They just don't like your face. Or sometimes they actually don't have anything against you, but it's the instrumental bullying where they just want something that you have.
Yeah. Incredible, the pains we have to go through on the playground and in the workplace. So let me ask you this. Were your personal experiences the impetus for you to get into this work that you, now you've devoted some 25 years? Because I want to get into the work you're doing.
Well, my work, I started in global diversity and inclusion. And that's been something that was a major thread through my entire life. So I wanted to find out how to create organizations that are inclusive. And obviously, bullying and toxicity do not help people feel included. So that's an aspect of when you're creating healthy cultures, when you're creating cultures that are not toxic, preventing and addressing bullying is a major part of it. So I would say my biggest perspective of what I do is healthy organizations where people can thrive and do their best work. And obviously, bullying is one of the major aspects that could prevent thriving organizations, along with discrimination. And sometimes bullying and discrimination and, identity-based harassment overlap, but not all the time. So bullying sometimes can occur between, two white women or two Hispanic men or whatever, but it also needs to be addressed. And that's another lacking thing sometimes. So I think like both discrimination and bullying need to be addressed when we're trying to create healthy workplaces.
Absolutely. And at this point, I think it's appropriate. I acknowledge as often as I can my white privilege, right? I had great advantages as a young person and in the opportunities I received at work. I will say, however, that I found, and the reason that I'm so passionate about this issue is because I was an executive over time. I had responsibility. I was a leader, and yet I was bullied. And the reason that I'm so interested in this issue is because it does cross all jobs, all races, all genders. And we're going to talk about neurodiversity in a moment. And so despite what your salary is or your privilege or lack of privilege, this can happen to you, which is why, I love the issue, because even with the advent of DEI, this is what I'm interested in, the focus on DEI in your work. How has that affected? Are we seeing more bullying because there are perhaps more diverse people in the workplace and people don't like that in some regards? Are you finding a nexus or connection between those two issues?
Again, it doesn't have to be a connection, but some of the psychological processes would overlap. So there is, for example, one story in my book that a disabled executive is telling about someone who was non-disabled, and they just couldn't stand the fact that a disabled person was in position of power and leadership. And that was bothering them, and that translated into bullying. But it doesn't necessarily have to be so. And we mentioned about 14% of bullying is upward. And most male bullies target other males as well as females. But because of men-on-men bullying, men are very often targets. And that creates an additional problem in that sometimes people feel like there is no recourse. If it's upward bullying or within whatever demographic category. So I think it gets really tricky, especially in the U.S., because in the U.S., few states have addressed legislatively bullying as separate thing from harassment, identity-based harassment. But for the most part, in the U.S., there is very little recourse, unlike some other countries, like, again, Europe, Australia have a little bit more just bullying legislation in the U.S. It really very often has to be identity-based harassment. So sometimes those people who seem to be in power, but they end up in a bullying situation, have very little recourse and have no, there is limited power what they can do. So I think we need to address both. We need to use a language of bullying as well as language of discrimination, because sometimes they overlap. And yes, there is bullying that occurs because someone doesn't like you for whatever your gender, religion, any other identity category reason. And sometimes it's either instrumental bullying, or somebody doesn't like your face, or nope, something that really cannot be pinned down under current legislation.
Yeah, so true. And so I want to get into one area of specialty that you have, and something that I haven't learned much about and haven't spoken to anybody about, this notion of bullying and neurodiversity, and which obviously your book, The Canary Code, deals with to a great degree. What interested you in this topic? And tell me, how common is this? And if you can give me some ideas of the kind of stories you're hearing in your practice where this is occurring and what you can do about it.
It actually happens a lot, that many bullying situations when people just can't explain why I just don't like someone. Very often this "I just don't like someone" is because the other person is neurodivergent. There is research that shows that neurotypical people, which would be just, you know, majority of the population that culturally would fit into the typical or average, and we know the culture changes, they kind of intuitively, specifically studies show with regard to autistic people, just intuitively like autistic people less, are less likely to empathize with them. So it's a dual empathy problem, which gets blamed on autistic people, but it actually goes both ways.
Yeah.
And the research shows that autistic people do tend to experience a lot more bullying. And there's also some research that shows that with ADHD, and I had one story about Tourette's in my book, which is a little bit more apparent than some of the other neurodivergent differences. So people sometimes experience horrendous bullying if they have like visible tics that sometimes occur in people with Tourette's.
Sure.
So neurodivergent people do tend to be bullied a lot. And I think, so in my personal experience, a part of it was being neurodivergent. And of course, I didn't know I was neurodivergent until much later in life. But looking back, some of those situations seemed like, okay, this person is not like saying nationalistic things, which also happened, but this other person, they just like hate me for no reason. But it's probably because they were picking up on my brain working a little bit differently, and they were like, different, I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, and so you are autistic yourself, as I understand. And so you have obviously a certain amount of knowledge and empathy that others might not. So let me get into this. Well, and I don't want to get deep into the legal stuff, but certainly I think if you were bullied because you're neurodivergent, wouldn't that come under the civil rights code of some kind? But also, I know how hard it is to prove these cases unless somebody says, oh, I hate you, you're autistic, get out of the office, unless it's that kind of obvious. That it's probably very hard to make a legal case. So in the cases where you're coming in and helping, how do you handle such a case? Do you talk to the bully? Are you counseling the autistic person? What's the pragmatic approach that you take?
Okay. So just to backtrack, I didn't know I was autistic until my late 40s. And that is very typical, especially for women. Especially for people who are on the higher side of intelligence, the diagnosis, A, just wasn't there when they were kids.
Yeah.
B, because of 4-year-old boy stereotype, they were just missed. So sometimes it occurs because of neurodivergence, but people actually don't know they're neurodivergent. So okay. They just think their decision and something is wrong with them. So that's one thing. When it is known that someone is neurodivergent, then yes, you might have a little bit more legal recourse.
I see.
But if you don't,
yeah.
Some people just like, well, let's get the weirder, right? And yeah. I hate this word, by the way.
But
I don't like it.
I understand what you mean.
That's what people do. They just don't like you for whatever reason, and they just classify you as weird, and then they go after you. And
yeah.
You may or may not know you're actually neurodivergent, and they may or may not know you're neurodivergent.
Okay, good.
So, but when people do know you're neurodivergent, again, they may or may not say something to your face, but the things that I experienced, like when people knew I was neurodivergent, that was actually very interesting. There were people who were like, oh, okay, so autistic people hate interruptions, let interrupt her all the time. And that literally happened. So
really?
The person, it was early on and very few people actually knew. Like, this was one of the few people that knew. And it was like every 15 minutes. So there are some people who would actually use knowledge about neurodivergent differences, and they will actually use it for bullying. So they won't say it, but the pattern that you would observe would show that they're actually using your disclosure against it, which is why disclosure is such a complicated thing. Sometimes people think, I need to disclose because maybe I will get more protection, and they actually get more bullying. And there's also research that shows that it does indeed happen. So it's a very double-edged sword. So, go ahead if you had.
I can see that. And I'm saying this sincerely, not as a joke. I hope I'm not interrupting you in any way that's uncomfortable for you. It's only that I'm really interested in what you're saying. And sometimes I want to interject with a further question, but I'll try not to do that for the reasons that you've described.
Yeah. Well, it's not an interruption when I'm talking, but when I'm working and trying to do focused work and somebody would barge into my office.
I see. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you for that clarification. And so, look, I mentioned so many of us who feel we're devoted and loyal, hardworking, productive in the workplace, with no challenges physically, emotionally, psychologically, and we get bullied. And so when you're somebody who is neurodivergent and they're being bullied, what can you say to them? Because they're already, if they know it, or even if they don't have a particular diagnosis, they may feel, oh, I'm different than others. And you can tell me whether that's true or not. But given that, what would you say to somebody in that circumstance for them? How should they deal with bullying when so many of us have, in my career, I never figured out the best approach?
Just an on note, if you are super productive, that could be another reason why you get bullied.
Yeah.
So there is this get the smarty pants phenomenon. Again, I wrote a couple of articles about that. It's also in my book. And that actually also applies sometimes to autistic people because they focus on our work and we deliver. And then people hate us because we're throwing the curve. And so your high performers can also get bullied because they're high performers. Sometimes people don't understand. They're like, I'm trying my best and I'm trying to do everything I can and I'm loyal and I'm doing the good work. But that could be actually why you get bullied, because other people are threatened by your productivity.
Yeah. And that's what I did. I just sat down and tried to work harder and better. And that was never a good thing. So again, just, I don't know if there's a different approach to people who may be autistic in terms of what you might say to them if they're being bullied. Is there any difference for how you would guide us or them in terms of the trauma that they might be feeling?
Okay. And I think that applies to everyone. It's really not about you. I really dislike target shaming or, you should change yourself. Okay. So if people really have some behaviors that, set others off, they probably know it. It's visible. But usually there's nothing that you can visibly change about what you do. And it's just others are permitted by organizational environment to engage in harmful behaviors. So I don't think changing individuals is very hard. And making autistic people being less autistic doesn't work. If someone, so let's say someone told me, well, yeah, you just need to be friendlier. You need to stop doing lunch at your desk and going and chatting with other people during lunch. Well, guess what? Chatting with people during lunch is going to drain me so much, I won't be able to work. No. So go and be friendlier is a very easy thing to say. But when social interaction is actually requiring a lot of effort, much more effort than doing the actual work, this demand may not necessarily be helpful.
Such a great point. And it resonates with me in such a significant way, because I could never quite figure out the politics of bullying. And it seemed to me that the bullies seem to spend a lot more time focusing on, if you'll excuse the expression, kissing ass on the top boss to make sure that, and also bullying other people. And I didn't have time to kind of navigate that. And maybe that was my mistake, that I never overcame, that I didn't quite figure all that out. But I had a job to do. And in my case, so I had 50 people working for me. And in another job, I had a global workforce in 5 different countries. And so I guess I should have spent more time, to your point, taking people out to lunch and all that. And I'll tell you a quick anecdote, which I've mentioned previously in this summit, which is I had a bully boss, and he was relatively new. I'd been working for him for about a month because my favorite boss got fired. And so I then became directly reporting to this person. And it wasn't going well. He was bullying me, micromanaging me, all kinds of things. And so I decided, to your point, I'm going to ask him to lunch. I figure we're two guys. He was younger than me. I was probably 40. He was probably 30, 32. I thought, let's go out to lunch and let's get away from the office. And I was so nervous to ask him to lunch, I finally did. And he said, "Regal, sit the F down. We don't need to break bread." I mean, he talked to me like I was 5 years old, and I was a 40-year-old vice president of original programming, you know. And so you're right. I don't like people that have solutions like that. So I appreciate your perspective on that. And so if, you know, it sounds like you're still healing, perhaps. I can tell you I'm still healing from it. Some things that happened 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I'm doing better, I'm healing, but I still remember these things very clearly. So how do you help people like me? And maybe, you know, how do you talk to yourself and others who have gone through it and are working to heal?
Well, again, it's a very loaded question. And I think we all need to understand that if someone tells you that sort of thing when you're trying to connect with them, it's not a you problem. And you cannot keep telling yourself that, oh, I should have done something differently. And I went through that phase too. I was just hating myself for not being more political and not being more sleek.
Okay.
And that was just before I figured out I was autistic. That actually prompted it.
Yeah.
But then you also realize I am who I am. And people who kiss up and kick down, they are who they are. Yeah. And yes, you could send them to, you know, better behavior school. And it's not even anger management, even if they are a yelling type, it's anger management. If they're just sneaky type, that's not even that.
Yeah.
But ultimately, organizations are responsible for psychological environment. So I'm an organizational psychologist. So my way of dealing with it is telling organizations, look what it's costing you in good people being driven out, in good people being driven sick, and creating more and more toxicity that spreads. And even if it looks to you like competition and you're listening to those kiss up people and you think others are okay, just look at your engagement numbers. Everybody does engagement surveys. Look at your retention numbers and see if you're losing talent in those areas where someone is kissing up to you, but things might not be happening the way they should be. So ultimately, organizations are responsible for stemming the kind of psychological violence that happens in the workplace. So that's what I do, and I try to teach organizations. But on the individual level, again, I'm not an individual level psychologist, but for my own sake, we know there is such thing as post-traumatic growth. So we talk about trauma, and sometimes people talk about, well, trauma, you're damaged forever.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely are going to have those memories and some bad things and bad experiences that sometimes you can like see someone who looks similar to that person and just be triggered and feel horrible. And those are things that we kind of need to work through and kind of learn to say that, no, I'm safe now. But we can also use those things and say, this is what I'm going to do. So for me, it's, you know, writing about health organizational cultures.
Yeah.
But for other people, it could be mentoring someone, could be creating conferences, could be just deciding that I am going to break that cycle. When, let's say, well, we talked before the recording about a healthcare where there's hazing cultures and generation to generation of nurses and doctors haze each other. And you just decide that I'm not going to do it. I'm going to break that cycle.
Yeah.
And whatever you decide to do and how you interpret yourself, I'm a person who is doing something, let's say, to break the cycle, at least within my realm of control. I'm doing whatever I can do, even if I'm not a CEO, but I'm not doing it to other people. And I'm seeing myself as someone who learned from horrible things and used those learnings for good. We can talk about it as post-traumatic growth. So,
okay.
Not just, okay, so there's trauma and there's probably some issues that are going to be horrible memories, but we can also learn from it and go and do good things and maybe learn to like, respect, and forgive ourselves and embrace ourselves and say that, you know what, no, it's not your fault that this person was allowed to behave like that in this organization. Yeah. So there are many things that we can do to reframe and not say that this is okay and now I'm going to do it, but say this is not okay and I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do better.
Okay. And we just have a couple moments left, but I have to ask you this question because you deal with this issue, both DEI and workplace aggression and civility across the globe and, of course, here in the United States. So, and you're doing such valuable work. My question is the problem intensifying, or are the voices like yours that are working so hard on these issues, are you finally and your colleagues making a difference, or is it getting worse because of our political discourse and so forth? What do you think?
Both. The political discourse is not helping when people see examples of, you know, incivility and twisting other people's words and all that. That doesn't help. Economic stress and insecurity doesn't help when people feel like, I just need to survive and keep my job. And if I backstab someone, it's just what it takes, that doesn't help. So there are many countries where there might be a little bit more security, but insecurity sometimes can, especially if organizations use it and they manage by fear and they're saying, we're going to replace all of you with AI, it creates a very unhealthy situation where ideally people would band together and say, you know what, this is not fair to any of us.
Yeah.
But people can also say, you know what, it's my survival versus everyone else's survival and just go into that mode. So we need to relearn as a society that my survival at the expense of your survival is probably going to lead to big bloodbath that's not going to help anyone.
Right.
But the norms of civility and norms of treating each other with dignity are things that I think we need to talk more and more about. And we need better examples from business world and from the political world, because people do repeat behaviors they observe in others. So just civility, treating each other with dignity, and preventing bullying on all in all areas, from business to schools, because obviously people learn bad behaviors pretty early at schools, families. So how people talk to each other in all aspects of society is important, because obviously all of that, the work is not insulated. Yeah, they tell us, leave your life at home and come to work. We know that.
Doesn't happen.
Yeah, so we need to kind of address the overall societal, cultural issues. But even within our work departments, we could make a conscious effort to create norms that support human dignity. So we can't also say that, well, we're just going to bully each other in this, you know, marketing unit or whatever in this academic department because the world is bad. No, we can take responsibility in whatever our area of influence is and clean that up so that at least within this particular area, we are showing better examples.
We must all think about those things in our communications. Ludmila, thank you so much for this important and informative conversation. It was just great. I learned so much and I appreciate your time. How can people contact you for more information about the things you've talked about here, your book and others?
I'm very easy to find. My LinkedIn profile comes up very easily. Ludmila Preslova, it's right up there. My book, The Canary Code, is, you know, anywhere the books are sold. And my website is also thecanarycode.com. And you can find some additional materials that come with the book. You can find many of my articles and media appearances linked. So there's a lot of additional information on different topics, including bullying. So those are pretty easy ways. You can also find me at, you know, Vanguard University of Southern California Industrial Organizational Psychology Program. I'm generally pretty easy to find. My LinkedIn profile is going to probably come up in basic Google search, and everything else is linked from there or my book website.
Terrific. Wonderful. Final word from me, bully targets and those of you in toxic work environments, let's aim to change the workplace for good. Thanks for watching.